Hello, everybody. Welcome back into your latest episode of Locked On Suns, Prey Locked On Podcast Network. Today's always your host, Evan Sidery. And this is, I guess, part two of what Bert and I are doing this week to close out this week. We're going to be back to you guys tomorrow for a draft episode, really focusing on some prospects who make sense for the Suns in this year's draft as they kept their pick at the trade deadline. But this is part two of our three biggest takeaways, or what we're most looking forward to in the second part of the season for the Suns post All-Star break. And there's actually a lot of intriguing options. I know Brendan went over some yesterday with the fit with Rubio and Booker, Ty Jerome as well, Jalen McHugh and his G League and his ascent. Maybe he gets minutes at the end of the season. I think those are definitely very interesting possibilities that Brendan brought up to you guys yesterday. But today we're going to dive in to my three that I'm really focusing on for the second part of the season. First up, let's dive into the big fellow himself real quick, DeAndre Ayton, because Ayton missed the first trimester of the season. He missed the first If you don't count the debut, he missed game two to game 26, and missing those 25 games due to the direct suspension really put a damper on the Suns and their playoff hopes this year. As Brendan alluded to yesterday, I think you guys know as listeners too, like, we don't believe the Suns are going to make the playoffs this year. They're 6.5 games out of the 8 seed now as we're getting out of the All-Star break. I just don't see any way the Suns will be able to do some sort of miraculous turnaround to take them into the 8 seed or have any other teams fall off in that capacity. But I think if DeAndre would have played all of that 25-game stretch that he missed through that suspension, I think the Suns might be right on the bubble there as far as being really close to that 8 seed, because Ayton's shown so far this year he's making actually a really big difference in the advanced metrics, but also the win-loss column and the points on and off, because the Suns are actually outscoring teams, and Ayton is on the floor so far this year in most games. And compared to last year, I know Ayton is one of the guys we've been talking about as far as had to make really significant strides defensively, really be a positive force in the NBA. But this year, that's exactly what DeAndre Ayton is doing. I'll give Monty Williams and his coaching staff credit, Mark Bryan especially, the assistant that really focused with the big men like Aaron Baines and DeAndre Ayton, because not only is Ayton putting up offensive numbers, even better offensive numbers than did last year, of course the efficiency has dropped off a little bit. The mid-range jumpers really put a damper in that efficiency total, but I think the last few games for the All-Star break, we really did not see many mid-range jumpers, and maybe those are slowly but surely getting out of Ayton's game, as Monty Williams has emphasized to Ayton on multiple occasions that he wants him to be aggressive inside, hammer it home a lot, and I think that's going to pay off a lot for DeAndre. But the defense is the swing skill set for DeAndre, and that's where the Suns, their ceiling really relies on, is if DeAndre reaches his maximum two-way ceiling, this Suns team probably goes as far as DeAndre and defensive capabilities can take them, even though Devin Booker, of course, is the MVP, the star of this team. I think Ayton's swing skill set, defense, rim protection is going to go a very long way for the Suns team long term. And you see Ayton's numbers so far this year, starting from a box score standpoint real quick, 18.7 points, 12 rebounds, 2.2 assists. He's doing that in about 33 minutes per game. But the blocks is the big thing here. That's what I really want to focus on, because 0.9 blocks and 30.7 minutes per game last year, that is up to 1.6 blocks, almost doubling his blocks per game so far this year. From an advanced metric standpoint too, Ayton has really seen a huge jump in block percentage, 2.6% to 4.2%, and that's a huge development for a guy DeAndre Ayton, because he's shown really on multiple occasions already that he's improving a lot in pick and roll situations as a defender, really rovering back to the rim, trying to contest guards who try to drive at the rim, or bigs try to attack him. He's able to hold his own more often. He's doing a lot better communicating. I know he gets on lapses sometimes, but it's really surprising how much Ayton has really picked up on, and that's a kudo to Monty Williams and his staff, because I just don't think I expected DeAndre Ayton to make this big of a jump in year two defensively, and that's where I think that the most growth had to be shown DeAndre Ayton, of course, because if he never makes this step forward, if he's not able to become at least an average, or even probably for the Suns' sake, an above average to an elite rim protector in the NBA, the Suns and their rebuild won't get that far off the ground, to be honest, because that's what has to happen here for this to work. And DeAndre Ayton, his defensive box plus minus has gone from a 0.2 to a 1.9. Really, all defensive metrics across the board have done wonders for Ayton and flipping it really on its head here for a little bit, and that's a good sign. And I think moving forward here with a guy like DeAndre and his defense is going to be the big talking point. And moving forward this last second half of the season post All-Star break, I want to see Ayton put up those massive games defensively. I know offensively I expect games where we're probably going to see a 30-point game here soon. I think that's coming very soon down the pike for Ayton, but also games where He's just dominant defensively. We saw it against the Rockets a couple weeks ago. We saw it in really a lot of games recently. Over the past 1 or 2 weeks, Aiden has shown really well to hold his own on both ends of the court, and he's really probably been the most impactful, consistent two-way player for the Suns over that stretch of games. And I think if he's able to do it more consistently over this half, and you also throw in a game like the – if you guys remember back to the Orlando Magic game last year where DeAndre Ayton really just showed a freakish potential, his maximum ceiling over a five-minute stretch against the Magic in overtime in late December, where I think he had three blocks in that period. He was hovering around the rim. He was being a monster on defense. Orlando couldn't do anything about it. DJ Augustine, Evan Fournier – were being locked down on drives by Aiden when he was switched on him. We saw Aiden really hold his own against a guy like Mo Bamba and Nikola Vucevic in that game too, really just locking them down. And that's – if you add in the potential of him being able to switch onto those wing guys too, like a Giannis Antetokounmpo we saw before, LeBron James, I think Aiden, his defensive ceiling is actually really high. And I know maybe the loyal listeners probably are surprised that I'm saying that, but I really think that – the growth I've seen from DeAndre Ayton in his first 23 games of year two has proven to me that the development is really going on a really good path right now for DeAndre Ayton. And that's a really good sign because I for Ayton's sake, I think he needs to become and probably not all NBA defender. He probably doesn't have to go that far, but he probably has to be at least a top 5, 6, 7 center defender in the NBA. And the Suns are definitely on the right track here because Aiden's really gone from unattainable in his first year, as far as the way he's able to navigate the floor defensively. But this year, he's definitely gone up to at least average level and going from horrible to average, really. And that's a good first step, and that's not even a baby step. I think that's a pretty big step moving forward, DeAndre. And so that's the number one thing I'm looking forward to as far as the second half of the season for the Phoenix Suns, DeAndre and his defense, because of course you know about the offense and offense potential with DeAndre, but the defense potential is the hidden element here, the swing skill set, like I said, with DeAndre and the Suns rebuild. And if Aiden's able to prove in these next 25-ish games that this defensive improvement is real and it maintains or it maybe even gets better throughout March and April, then the Suns, I think, are mining a gem here, and it could be for a huge breakout year three for DeAndre Ayton. But before we go on to our next segment, my second bullet point here with you guys for what I'm most looking forward to in the second part of the year for the Suns from a storyline standpoint, I want to tell you guys really quickly about our sponsor of today's show, which is the Arizona Office of Tourism. If you want to follow your baseball teams here in Arizona, one of the better states out there in the U.S., I've lived here for a little bit, now a couple years, moved from Indiana. Obviously, having spring training baseball here is a perk for me. I live right over near the Cubs Stadium. I'm taking advantage of that an awful lot this year. But there's a lot more outside of that. If you guys want to go see a Cubs game, a White Sox game, Angels game, there's 15 MLB teams here, 10 stadiums, always good temperatures around here, never too hot at this time of the year, so that's not too bad. You meet the players, you get the autographs too. You have an up-close personal experience at a smaller spring training venue compared to a regular MLB game. And that's what I think is so unique about spring training baseball out here in Arizona, because you really get an up-close personal look, and I think definitely fans of baseball should take advantage of this opportunity, because not only that, there's great restaurants, great musical environments, live music from local and national artists. We have museums in town really expanding across multiple ranges. And it's known for incredible landscapes too, the state of Arizona. You hit the road, enjoy some urban, unique town centers, some scenic drives too. You can bring the kids along the Monument Valley, Horseshoe Bend, take a drive on the Tucson or the Grand Canyon, north or south if you want to. If you want to bring the kids along to spring training, Arizona is a fantastic destination for families. Family-friendly resorts and hotels offer plenty of fun for kids of all ages, from water parks to horseback rides to games and activities. Arizona also has tons of fun stuff for kids to see, like wild parks, science museums, etc. Plan your spring training getaway at visitarizona.com/springtraining. Again, that is visitarizona.com/springtraining. Alrighty, let's dive in now to my second bullet point as far as what I want to hit on today with you guys in our part two of Brent and I's real looking forward storylines for the second half of the season. My first one was DeAndre and his defensive improvements, if he can maintain that, maybe even exceed what we saw in the first 23 games for DeAndre and so far this year in his second season as an NBA pro. Mikal Bridges is my second bullet point here because from what we've seen from Mikal in the last, I'd say, 4 or 5 weeks, and more specifically, probably on a smaller sample size, the last 10 or so days before the All-Star break started, I really think what Mikal is doing is the button's starting to click for him. I think the switch is starting to flip, because I think he now is starting to realize, I've been hammering this point home to you guys often, that I think once the switch flips for Mikal, where he realizes in his head, like, hey, if I take this open shot, it doesn't really hurt the flow of the offense. I don't have to immediately pass the ball. I don't have to really try to keep setting up Kelly and Devin and DeAndre all the time. I can try to get my own shot sometimes. And I think that's really helping him grow his offensive game and his confidence, as we've seen. He's up to almost 35% for three-point range so far this year. And the hitch in his shot is almost gone. And that's a huge development for a guy like Mikal, because if that disappears, I know Coach Darko has worked with him. I know Bob Young wrote a story on this for The Athletic, that Darko and the other assistants on the Suns coaching staff have worked diligently with Mikal to get rid of that hitch in his shot. It's really doing well. I think he's shooting 39.5% from three since Thanksgiving, close to 40% over a big sample size like that for Mikal. I think that shows you pretty well, even though it's on a lower volume than it should be, around 2.5 attempts per game. If that gets up to around 3.5, 4.5, and he's still putting up close to 37, 38, 39, 40%, then the Suns are back in business with Mikal Bridges as a legitimate 3-and-D prospect, because Mikal, for a little bit there, I think he was just a D prospect as far as being a defender who is kind of like an Andre Roberson, I would say, just offensively-wise, just not really doing much outside cuts to the basket. His shot was just so bad at some points with his mechanics. But since Thanksgiving, since this Christmas, January time, I really think Mikal has found something, whether it's confidence, whether it's just his ability to read the floor better as an offensive threat. I think him just empowering himself is a lot of this challenge, and I think Mikal is accomplishing that, because him taking that next step, him becoming a guy you can rely on to give you at least 10 to 12 points per game, which he's done over the last 10 or so games, while adding in his defense, while adding his high IQ basketball play, Mikal is such a valuable piece to the Suns team. I think more and more, especially when we see these small ball lineups with Kelly Oubre and Mikal, which is going to be, by the way, my third point we're going to hit on here in a few minutes. But Mikal is just a glue guy. It's so valuable to this team that they have a player, of course, not high usage. He's only around 11, 12% floating there with high usage guys alongside like Booker, Oubre, and Ayton. But the way he's able to not really make much mistakes, the way he's able to just command himself on the floor, be a vocal communicator defensively, be able to move the ball offensively, and get his own shot, be a outstanding cutter. I think him and Rick Rubio have tremendous chemistry offensively, and that's gone a long way too for Mikal blossoming a little bit more offensively. But I really think that having a guy like Rubio has done wonders for him, but the self-confidence angle, I think, is the big – I haven't had a chance to ask Mikal this, but I think it's a good idea to ask Mikal, because it just seems like whatever it is, I think it was probably close to around Christmas or January when the role kind of simplified for Mikal. They were really tossing a lot his way early on the season as far as going from four to three. You play him a little bit at two, guard some point of attack, ones at some points. Offensively, you're going to go over here to the left, do some stuff in the post, go over here, run around some screens. A lot of information was thrown at Mikal at one time, and obviously the injuries did not help out, so you had to throw Mikal into some not opportune spots where he was really guarding some like huge burly seven-footers at some points when you saw guys like Sarge and Kaminsky and Baines and even DeAndre Ayton miss time due to injury, and we've seen Mikal being thrown around the gamut as far as defensive assignments go, and he's handling like a pro. I mean, Mikal never complains. Mikal is always doing his job, and on the nights where Mikal is doing really well, this Suns team is, I mean, you look at the numbers and it just goes to show you the impact he has on the game. When he's doing well for himself, the Suns usually win those games, because you look here, when Mikal has a plus-minus above plus 10 in a game, the Suns have lost one game all year. They've lost one game when Mikal is above a plus 10, and in those outings, that was a four-point loss to the Kings on November 19th. And in those matchups, you've seen the Suns win by double digits at least six of those 11 instances. So when Mikal is going on both ends of the court and these games, we've seen Mikal have 26 in a game, 20 against Sacramento in a loss. These games where he's able to get going offensively, have that confidence going, get aggressive early on while also being a menace defensively, keeping that up, shooting well from three, if Mikal is your second or third best player on one night to go along with a good night from Booker, Ayton, or Oubre, the Suns are winning most of those games. And that's a very exciting part if you're a Suns fan here, because I know that the road here for Mikal was very difficult. I know I had my doubts early on in, let's say, November, December, early December with Mikal and his shot, because we were reaching, I think, a rock bottom point with the way he was able to create for himself offensively. It's definitely been huge progress for a guy like Mikal to see the growth offensively that we are right now. And it's the inverse of DeAndre, ironically enough, where Mikal, I think, for him to have his swing skill set be more of an aggressive scorer, at least being able to be relied upon to hit open threes, which is doing a lot better clip this year. And in DeAndre, his defensive rim protection ability. You have an elite defender in Bridges and an elite offensive big man in DeAndre, but the other skills, their opposites, their weaknesses, are what really need to be worked on. And luckily for the Suns, they are definitely seeing some real big progress from those guys this year. We've seen DeAndre, of course, but then Mikal in these games where he's able to show confidence. And with him taking that next step forward in his game, I think it's going to do wonders for the Suns team. And I'm going to dive in next to what I really want to talk about, which is Mikal and Kelly Oubre. Can those two coexist long-term in a starting lineup? Because from what we've seen so far with Mikal and Kelly, the advanced numbers and the eye test tell me, I think the Suns should continue to explore this possibility well into next year. But before we go on, I want to remind you guys to subscribe to Locked On Suns if you're not already. And also follow our Twitter account if you're not already as well at Locked On PHX Suns. We're with you guys 5 days per week in season, three times per week in the offseason. We get A-plus analysis from Brennan and I. We're also with you on whatever streaming platform you're on, whether it's Brightside of the Sun, just the website itself, or whether you're listening on Apple iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play. We're on every single streaming format, so you cannot miss out on Locked On Suns. So if you guys also enjoy what you're hearing, make sure to leave us a five-star review. We always appreciate the reviews. And if you guys leave us a review, we'll make sure to read it on the air at some point. So thanks again for the support. Make sure to subscribe to Locked On Suns. Alrighty, let's dive in now to my final point of the show, what I'm most looking forward to post All-Star break. And that has to be, I think, just the moving forward, the combination of Kelly Oubre and Mikal Bridges. Can those two coexist long-term as a starting duo next to DeAndre and in the Suns front court? Because I just like the switchability that group brings, that trio in the front court. You have Uber athleticism, you have a lot of length with Oubre and Bridges, and you have DeAndre and ever improving as a rim protector. I think having those two out there at the same time with DeAndre also gives DeAndre more confidence in himself as a defender, surprisingly enough, I think. It gives DeAndre more on his plate, but also a guy like Mikal and Kelly can help pick up the slack a little bit and pick up his loose ends if he messes up at some point. And I think just having those two out there together is such a great idea for a guy like DeAndre to help develop, because I just feel like confidence-wise, I know I talked a lot about confidence surprisingly on today's show, but just the mental aspect with these young prospects and developing is so big, and putting them in advantageous situations to do that I think is huge. And this Oubre Bridges lineup with a DeAndre Ayton so far this year, include Ricky Rubio into that, Devin Booker. This five-man lineup the Suns are trotting out of Rubio, Booker, Bridges, Oubre, and DeAndre Ayton. And if you guys wanted to guess the net rating so far this year, they're outscoring teams by 15 points per 100 possessions, 122 offensive rating, which is outstanding, 106.9 defensive rating, which is well above average. So I think this unit, this starting lineup, has super high potential. I especially think that the front court does too, to insulate Devin Booker as a score-first player. You'd have Bridges and Oubre roaming around. You have Bridges your main point of attack defender. You have Rubio guarding someone. Oubre on an athletic four, or DeAndre on the five. You'd have the ability to hide Devin Booker on defense, which is great too, because I know Booker would probably love to spend most of his energy offensively if he could. I really do think that there's a chance that when you see a lineup like Booker, Rubio, Bridges, Oubre, and Ayton, it's like a 2020 lineup. It's a lineup, I think, that makes sense in today's NBA. I'm so glad that we don't have to talk about Aaron Baines and DeAndre Ayton starting together anymore. That was a failed experiment on Monty Williams' part. But I just think the versatility that you can allow DeAndre Ayton to play with as a rim protector, you have the energy and athleticism and length you provide from Bridges and Oubre to go along with Rubio and Booker. I just love that idea. And you look at the three-man net rating so far this year, looking up for you guys while I'm talking here, the net rating for the three-man lineup trio of Oubre, Bridges, and Ayton in 344 minutes so far this year, 115.9 offensive rating, 110 defensive rating, for a net rating of 5.9. So outscoring opponents by almost 6 points per 100 possessions when those three are out there together, not including Booker or Rubio. So I think that that's really intriguing to me, because you are able to try to a small front court, but one that makes up for itself with length and athleticism, which I think goes a long way. If Oubre can become a guy who's shooting 37% like he is so far this year, if Mikhail can have that swing skill set of his shot, if that returns, his touch has gone in the shot, then you have now a spaced out front court for DeAndre and where he can operate inside. And if he's able to eventually stretch out too, that opens up the Pandora's box for this entire offense, because if Ayton ever does that eventually, then I think it's game on for this offense to become an elite level team. But Oubre and Bridges, according to I was looking at some defensive rebounding metrics and listening to some podcasts as well. And I guess if you have a defensive rebound percentage above 70% for a lineup, then that is capable enough to really hold your own in today's NBA. And you compare the three-man lineup of Oubre, Bridges, and Ayton, their defensive rebounding percentage is 72.3. If you take out Bridges and put in Dario Saric in his place, that goes up to 76.9. So 75.9. So you're losing about 4% rebounding percentage, but you're still above the average Mendoza line of 70%. So that, I think that means that Bridges and Oubre and Ayton can actually survive rebounding wise, because I think Ayton can. We talked about on the show plenty, but I think DeAndre Ayton's a guy who could eventually be a consistent league leader in rebounds per game. And this lineup especially, I think Ayton can gobble up rebounds at a high rate, 12, 13, 14 per game, wouldn't surprise me if you try out this lineup for the long term. And I think Bridges and Oubre can make up for those lack of rebounding, lack of size with their defense, because when Oubre and Bridges are clicking together, this team is so fun to watch defensively. It helps lock in Ayton, helps lock in Booker. If Rubio is doing his thing too, then, I mean, there's been instances where that's happened so far this year, and the Suns, I don't imagine, have lost a game when that's happened. So I think that's a big plus in the feather of the cap of the Suns' rebuild so far, is that I think these things, they're starting to gel itself out. I think they're starting to show you the positives of what could be to come for this team, especially the lineup trio of Bridges, Oubre, and Ayton. If this front court can show itself in the second half of the season post-All-Star break, that could be a functional trio and a functional starting lineup moving forward, then I want to see this lineup explored even more throughout the rest of the season, throughout the 2020-2021 season, before Kelly Oubre's contract expires, before Mikhail Bridges' extension eligible. I think if you're able to decide by the end of 2020-2021 that Kelly Oubre is our long-term starting 3-4, Mikhail Bridges is our long-term starting 3-4 with DeAndre Ayton, then you have your core in place. You have Oubre, you have Bridges, you have Ayton, you have Rubio and Booker. And Rubio is really not your long-term answer at point guard, but you at least have four of your five spots locked up there. And I really like that possibility. If Oubre can continue to be a developing scorer, maybe you can rely on him being a 20-point-per-game scorer, taking another leap forward in his next season. Mikhail taking another leap forward. DeAndre Ayton taking another leap forward. I think the Suns team has a lot of positive steps it can really make. And the second half of the season, post-All-Star break, is going to go a very long way towards showing what the Suns could be entering into the 2020-2021 season. Because if the Suns finish this year with, let's say, 32 wins, next year has to be, I think, 40 or 45. I think that's the kind of season, the kind of leap the Suns need to make forward in that season, because we've seen from 2019-2020 what the Suns were able to do as far as going from 19 wins probably into the 30s this year, unless something happens as far as injuries go, knock on wood here. But I think that taking that leap forward is necessary, then having the leap forward from the 30s to the 40s is really the most important step. And next year, you might have the ability of doing that if you keep forward with this Bridges, Oubre, Ayton trio. And if it's able to show you positive dividends on most nights and really show you it can handle itself against most NBA front courts, why not keep exploring with it? Why not actually explore the possibility that this could be your long-term answer as the Suns front court? So just overviewing one more time for you guys, my three biggest points I wanted to hit on as far as post-All-Star break for the Phoenix Suns, what I'm most looking forward to watching. First up would be DeAndre and his rim protection, his defensive improvement. That is the swing skill set for the Phoenix Suns in their rebuild. Ayton has definitely shown so far this year he's taken a huge step forward in that. My second point, Mikhail Bridges, his offensive growth, so the inverse of DeAndre Ayton there. If he's able to be more confident in himself, have bigger nights offensively in the second half of the season, it's going to do a lot for this team. And my final point, the long-term aspirations of a starting lineup possibility of Mikhail Bridges and Kelly Oubre alongside DeAndre Ayton. Can that be a trio that survives as a front court long term into the 2020s for this Phoenix Suns team. That is a possibility that we need to start looking into more, because Oubre's contract expires after next year and Mikal Bridges is extension eligible. So that'll do today's episode of Locked On Suns, as me, Evan, goes into my points as far as what I'm looking forward to most second half of the season, as Brennan started us off here at part one. We'll be back to guests tomorrow as Brennan and I regather ourselves for an NBA draft preview.